Good morning. It's Wednesday, August 6th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how a booming industry is quietly driving up your electric bills. Journalists unveil a massive police misconduct database. And can Adam Driver's booming voice keep cattle safe from predators? But first, to the Trump administration's moves against some of America's most elite colleges and universities. The White House has cut and frozen billions of dollars of federal funding to push higher education institutions closer in line with its cultural worldview. And the pressure seems to be working.
It's been kind of remarkable just how well that playbook has worked so far.
That's Bloomberg education reporter Liam Knox. In recent weeks, three universities, Columbia, Brown, and the University of Pennsylvania, struck deals with the administration to release frozen funds. Taken together, Columbia and Brown agreed to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to the federal government, or in Brown's case, to local workforce development programs. The government will now reportedly have access to standardized test scores and the GPAs of every student that applies to Columbia and Brown, plus information about their race. Officials at Penn, meanwhile, publicly agreed to ban transgender women from women's sports to align with the administration's position. In its deal, Columbia did not admit to any wrongdoing, and its acting president, Claire Shipman, told CNN they walked away preserving what felt most important to them, their academic independence.
I actually think the narrative that paints this as a kind of binary situation, courage versus capitulation, is just wrong. It's too simplistic. This was a really, really complex problem. And I will argue over and over again that choosing to listen, choosing to try to solve the problem with everything that we had at stake is not capitulation. It was extraordinarily difficult.
Many schools that have been targeted by the White House are struggling without federal funds. Some have taken on debt, laid off staff, and cut spending. And Knox says that financial pressure has forced them to the table.
I think the fact that universities are willing to take that gamble, despite the fact that there's certainly no assurance that there's not going to be more federal funding freezes down the line, more grant cuts down the line, shows just how much universities are dependent on this kind of federal funding.
As some schools have cut deals, there's been a cascading effect with more institutions showing a willingness to enter talks. Bloomberg reports that Cornell and Northwestern are close to agreements with the White House, though both schools declined to comment on settlement talks. At Northwestern, the administration froze $790 million back in April. University officials say these past few months have been some of their most difficult to navigate, and they announced the elimination of over 400 positions last week. Even if these schools do come to some kind of agreement with the Trump administration, university leaders worry how much more will be asked of them in the future.
That those dollars are not going to come without strings attached and without potentially ideological strings attached is a very, very new thing. And there might be a little bit of reticence to rely as heavily as they have been on in the past on these kinds of federal grants.
One exception to this trend, at least so far, is Harvard, the administration's biggest target. The funding cuts will cost the school $1 billion a year, according to Harvard's estimates. The administration has demanded Harvard spend $500 million to restore funding. The New York Times reported that the school is considering a settlement, but the school's president reportedly told faculty in recent days that they plan to keep fighting in court. And as the wealthiest school in the country, it's better positioned than others to hold its ground. Extreme heat has defined the summer of 2025. And for millions of Americans, extreme electricity bills have come along with it. According to the Department of Energy, the average American is paying about 6.5% more for power this year compared to last year. The eastern half of the country is seeing especially high costs, particularly people in Maine, who are paying 36% more for power on average. But as Washington Post reporter Peter Wariski explained, temperatures are not the only thing making power expensive. The AI boom is playing a big role.
their demand for electricity is driving up the price. And as a result, everybody, not just the data centers, are paying more for electricity.
Many parts of the country are seeing more data centers that power AI pop up, which is taxing the capacity of the grid and raising prices. But there are 13 states feeling the impact the most, in large part because of how they buy their power every year.
From New Jersey to Ohio, all the way down to Virginia, they share an electricity market. So if they need extra capacity during the summer, when electricity demand is high, they basically go to an auction and they bid for it.
These auctions happen annually and act as a bellwether for electricity prices nationwide over the coming year.
What happened last year is that the auction went kind of crazy. And as a result, all of those utilities are paying much, much more for capacity for their customers, and they've been passing that along to the customers this summer.
In Trenton, New Jersey, bills rose by about $26. In Philadelphia, bills climbed by about $17 on average. Columbus, Ohio saw $27 hikes.
$20 a month might not sound like that much to some people, but it's certainly a lot to people who are watching every penny.
Their bills could get even bigger next year. At this year's auction, prices climbed again by about 22%. And the way electricity bills are calculated, the whole country could be affected as a result, not just these select states. People that Wariski spoke to said they don't think it's fair that big tech companies are building and profiting from these data centers while everyday people have to pay higher bills.
Most people are kind of aghast that they may not use any AI or they might not be online very much, but they're paying the price in terms of higher electricity bills because of these companies that are, you know, making billions of dollars. And they ask, you know, if they're making billions of dollars, why am I being asked to pay $20 extra a month for electricity?
Still, some states are eager to build more data centers. Several have offered tax breaks to companies and other incentives. And one company has begun taking steps to lower their strain on the grid. Yesterday, Google signed a first-of-its-kind deal with Michigan and Tennessee to scale back data center usage during periods of high electricity demand. Now let's turn to California, where decades of police misconduct data was made accessible to the public for the first time.
Here in California, we had some of the most secretive laws in the country. Access to those kinds of records was just completely cut off.
KQED's criminal justice reporter Suki Lewis told us that made tracking patterns in policing across the state next to impossible. And people impacted by police violence had very little recourse to get answers.
They would go to their local agency and say, what happened? How was my loved one shot? Who were the officers involved? Was anybody disciplined? Were there any policies broken? And the general answer was always, that's confidential.
But when California lawmakers adopted laws in 2018 to improve transparency around police records, a team of investigative journalists, data scientists, lawyers, and civil liberties advocates got to work. They spent 7 years building a public database, which went live this week, that tracks police use of force and misconduct across hundreds of California law enforcement agencies. It was the first project of its kind nationwide, and they discovered around 12,000 cases of force and misconduct dating back to the 1960s. Lewis says with this database, journalists and academics are now finally positioned to start piecing together patterns, like officers being accused of sexual offenses while on duty.
Often when the women would go to complain that something had happened, they were not believed. Now, this is not an uncommon story, but I think especially in a law enforcement context, an internal affairs context, in which they are people responsible not just for investigating themselves, but also investigating sex crimes, to be in this position of not believing women was very, very troubling. And a lot of serious incidents did not result in criminal charges for the officers, even if they did result in discipline.
It's also providing a window into how police use force in prisons. Lewis told us about one prison that had avoided investigation despite evidence of abuse.
And there was a pattern there of officers who would take people who are incarcerated into places that were outside of the view of the cameras that were in the prison. And then they would say, oh, they were resisting, they were doing this, they were doing that. We had to use force to bring them back under control. And they would end up with incredibly severe injuries, broken backs, broken legs, broken ribs, concussions. And one man actually died as a result.
She says the creators of this project hope it will be a valuable tool for victims and their families.
One man, Cephas Johnson, whose nephew was Oscar Grant, who was shot in the back by police in 2009, he said, getting those answers, you know, getting to see these records for families is the beginning of the healing process, the beginning of trying to get answers.
And she says they hope police chiefs will find the information useful, too, as they make hiring decisions.
There are many police officers who don't want bad apples working alongside them.
This project is a work in progress. The creators plan to keep requesting and adding new records before they're lost forever.
The California Reporting Project, this project, were the only people requesting these records. And because of destruction laws, they're able to be destroyed after 5 years in a lot of cases. So starting to build this database and keeping it going, I think, can begin to provide this really rich text that's available for people just who are curious about what is happening locally.
If you want to check out the California database for yourself, we'll include a link in our show notes page. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. Rwanda has reached a deal with the U.S. to be paid to accept up to 250 deported migrants. A Rwandan government spokesperson said this is in line with Rwanda's values to help displaced people and that individuals will be given workforce training, healthcare, and accommodations to jumpstart their lives in a new country. Back in June, the Supreme Court ruled to allow the Trump administration to deport migrants to countries other than their country of origin without first giving them a chance to show they could be harmed. But the legality of the removals is being contested in a federal lawsuit in Boston, a case that could potentially make its way back to the high court. This is not the first time Rwanda has opened its doors in this way. It reached a similar deal with the UK in 2022, but it was scrapped after a UK court ruled that the government could not guarantee that asylum seekers would be safe in a country long accused of serious human rights abuses. We now know why the Titan submersible imploded while on an expedition to see the Titanic shipwreck, killing all five on board back in 2023. A damning report from the U.S. Coast Guard concluded that the sub had a catalog of technical failures and had suffered damage from earlier dives that had not been properly fixed. It also concluded OceanGate chief executive Stockton Rush showed, quote, negligence that contributed to the deaths and that the company, quote, leveraged intimidation tactics to evade regulatory scrutiny. And finally, a surprising story about managing wildlife. The Wall Street Journal reports that staffers at the Department of Agriculture have been experimenting with blasting different sounds to protect livestock herds from packs of gray wolves. The sounds play from drones that zero in on wolves when they're on the hunt. Some of the sound cues that have successfully scared off the wolves include AC/DC's famous rock anthem, Thunderstruck, and a recording of the fight scene between Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver in the movie Marriage Story.
You're being so much like your father.
Do not compare me to my father.
I didn't compare you to him. I said you were acting like him.
You're exactly like your mother. Everything you're complaining about her, you're doing. You're suffocating Henry.
A USDA district supervisor in Oregon, whose real name is Paul Wolf, by the way, said that he needs wolves to know that, hey, humans are bad. And what better way to send that message than hearing that scene play out? One ranch owner told the Journal that he was grateful for the drone support, but he figured that eventually the wolves will get used to it and carry on doing what wolves do. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Popular Mechanics looks at the pretty wild but hopefully good plan NASA has come up with to defend the Earth in the unlikely event of a massive asteroid approaching. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.